How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Celtics with the Reigning Jays. We're here today, actually, our first collaboration with the Locked On Network. We are bringing in Sean Hyken from Locked On Bulls. How's it going, Sean?
It's good to be with you today.
It's always good to be with me, right? So, obviously, the other night, draft night, things got a little crazy. A lot of reported talks between the Bulls, the Celtics, and the Bulls and the Timberwolves. How serious do you think they are about Jimmy Butler? Is this a lot of smoke, or is there some substance there?
I think as of right now, it's a lot of smoke. I said, like, throughout draft night, I would have been very surprised if Jimmy had actually gotten traded. They had just traded Derrick Rose the day before, and I think the whole point of shopping either one of them was that it was, that, you know, they couldn't really play together, and it was kind of one or the other that would have to go, and the thought was it would be easier to trade Jimmy because you can actually get something back for him, and then they were somehow, I don't know how they were able to get actual value back for Derrick Rose, but they did with that trade with the Knicks. But it just wouldn't have made a lot of sense to trade Jimmy right now just to trade him. I don't think any of the packages that they were being offered were compelling enough to really make them decide, okay, we're going to just cut bait on this 26-year-old two-time All-Star on a really good contract who has 3 years left on his deal, where it's not like they're in some kind of rush to trade him.
Yeah, that's the thing that's been weird about this to me, is that Butler is young. He is on a great contract. He is the type of player you want to build around. Why do you think the Bulls would even consider moving him?
I think because that teams around the league are seeing that, you know, this is, it's kind of an imperfect marriage between him and Fred Hoiberg, and obviously they had that drama in December when Jimmy said after a loss in New York that he wished that Fred would coach the team harder. So there's a perception around the league that there's a little bit of tension between the two of them or some kind of awkward dynamic. And so teams are calling. Teams are saying, hey, if it seems like you guys aren't going to be able to make the Jimmy Butler-Fred Hoiberg thing work, which I think is overblown, but if that's the impression people get, they're going to certainly call and try to make offers.
Yeah, and then do you think they need a full rebuild? Like, obviously they had the nice run, and then the Derrick Rose injury kind of screwed everything up. And like, their timeline was all messed up. Rose came back. He wasn't nearly the same. Noah kind of fell off real quick. Pau Gasol, he got older and older, even though he's still productive. Does it seem like they need a full rebuild, or do you think they have enough pieces to kind of get back to respectability and better with the guys they have on their current roster?
Well, from what I can tell you about the mentality of the front office, I don't think they really have the stomach for a full rebuild. Jerry Reinsdorf is a guy who's very focused on making money with the Bulls. I don't think he's going to just punt on the extra games of playoff revenue if they were going to try to get back. I know they didn't make the playoffs last year, but I think they still think that they are going to be competitive if they make some moves in free agency. And, you know, even with the Derrick Rose trade, they didn't just give him away for nothing and just get worse. They got back Jerry and Grant, who's a point guard prospect they liked in the draft last year. They got Robin Lopez, who's a quality starting center, who is honestly probably an upgrade over the player that Joakim Noah is right now, if not as good of a player as he was in 2014 when he won Defensive Player of the Year. But, you know, what he is now, I think Robin Lopez is a better player. Now, with the Jimmy stuff, I just don't see how there's any pieces that they can get back for him that make more sense as something to build around than just keeping Jimmy Butler, unless the Timberwolves were somehow willing to offer Andrew Wiggins, which I would be shocked if that was ever on the table. I think that was probably the end of those conversations. Was, you know, they would, Tom Thibodeau would call him up and say, hey, we want Jimmy Butler, and the Bulls would say, hey, will you give us Andrew Wiggins? And Tom says, no way. And that's the whole conversation. So outside of that, like, with these, you know, I know that the Celtics have a ton of assets, but it's like, is Jay Crowder really the guy that you're going to build around? And, you know, Chris Dunn, I know, is the guy that they really liked at number three in the draft. But, you know, there's no guarantee that Chris Dunn is ever going to be as good as Jimmy Butler is right now.
That's the thing to me, too. It feels like the Celtics only make sense, real sense, as a trade partner if the Bulls want to kind of blow it up and take a step back and get in the lottery next year, get a good lottery pick in a loaded draft class, and then maybe add some draft considerations from the Celtics on top of that. That's definitely not something they would do. That to me, that's the only reason you trade Jimmy Butler, is if you think keeping Jimmy Butler, you're going to be right around the 8 seed, whatever, with the current roster you have, or at the tail end of the lottery, and you want to get worse in the short term to help yourselves out long term. Does that make sense? Like, why are they looking to get starting quality players for him, I guess, is my point. Wouldn't you rather get worse in the short term and kind of try to get a really good pick in that loaded draft in 2017?
Yeah, you would think so, but the Bulls, they're an organization. They've always been very conservative. They've been very risk averse. They're not going to go out and do something bold like, we're just going to blow it up and get drafted. They're not going to do what the Sixers did and just actually try to purposely get worse to get a good draft pick. They, you know, they went through that once after Michael Jordan retired in 1998. They had the Tim Floyd era in the early 2000s, and that, and it's just something I don't think Jerry Reinsdorf really wants to go back to again. And I think they want to stay competitive. I think they feel like they can stay competitive. Get starting quality players. They still think, and I don't agree with them on this, but they think that they can sell free agents just on the city of Chicago. Like, that's something that Gar Forman said the other night, is that that's going to be a big part of their free agent pitch, is, hey, come play in the city of Chicago. But they're going to have about $25 million in cap space, and I expect them to use it.
Yeah, what were your thoughts when the reported trade talks came out about the packages offered both by the Celtics, reportedly offered both by the Celtics and by the Timberwolves?
Well, like I said earlier, Jay, I never really thought that a deal was going to happen. Especially when you had been hearing all day the thing you have to keep in mind with all this stuff is everything always leaks because somebody wants it to leak. And you've been hearing all day that the Celtics and the Sixers were in talks about that number three pick because the Sixers really wanted Chris Dunn. And so then once the Celtics are on the clock and you hear that, they're still talking with the Sixers, then, all of a sudden they're talking to Jimmy Butler. They're talking to the Bulls about Jimmy Butler, too. My first impression was that stuff was probably leaked by somebody in the Celtics in order to drive pressure the Sixers into giving up more for the pick. And then once they ended up not making that either of those deals and taking Jaylen Brown with the number three pick, then My understanding from a couple of people I've talked to is that Tom Thibodeau called them up, or maybe not Tom, but Scott Layden or somebody with the Timberwolves called up Gar and Pat and offered the number five pick because the Bulls really like Chris Dunn. They offered the number five pick, and then I think Ricky Rubio was the other piece that they offered. Ricky Rubio on the number five pick is not going to get it done for Jimmy Butler. At the very minimum, the Bulls would have had every right to ask for Wiggins back for a player like Jimmy Butler, even though that wouldn't have been realistic. But at the very least, you need to get, Zach LaVine and Gorgui Dieng. You need to get some of their other young pieces back. Ricky Rubio and the number five pick in a weak draft is not going to get that done.
Yeah. My favorite part about this whole thing was the vision of Tom Thibodeau calling the Bulls front office and be like, hey, guys, I got what you want. I got the pick that's going to be Chris Dunn. That relationship was so rocky.
And that's why I've always thought that it was unlikely that they were ever going to do a trade with the Timberwolves. Because, the Bulls, like I said earlier, the Bulls don't really feel like they're in the position to rebuild. And if they're going to rebuild, the thing you have to remember is when they fired Tom, they kept the exact same roster the next year under Fred Hoiberg. They drafted Bobby Portis in the first round. And other than that, the roster was literally exactly the same as the roster before that. And their thought, because they disliked Tom so much on a personal level, was that if they just got rid of the coach they didn't like and brought in a coach they do like, then, they'd be right back there. And then they didn't make the playoffs this year. So the idea of blowing it up and trading Jimmy Butler and completely starting over is hard enough for them to swallow. But doing that while giving Tom Thibodeau to Jimmy Butler, I just can't imagine that being something that they're particularly willing to do. And I know it's the kind of thing where you have to put personal grudges with people aside and do what's best for the team, but this is a personal business, and there is still a lot of bad blood between Tibbs and Gar and Pax.
Yeah, there was so much bad blood there. I found it so funny that it was Thibodeau, and really his first draft night, he ends up with the guy that the Bulls reportedly want, and apparently in serious trade talks with the team that hated him enough that even in the press release about letting him go, kind of badmouthed him. Nobody does that. That was unreal.
The whole Tibbs thing was so ugly, but the other part of it, this is how bad it got. Jared Reinsdorf is not a guy that likes to pay people to not work for him. And he had to really be talked into using the amnesty provision on Carlos Boozer in order to clear the cap space to go after Pau Gasol or go after Carmelo Anthony when they were doing that. But he fired Tom with 2 years left on his contract. That's how bad it got. They still owe him $4 million a year for the next 2 years, and I think that offsets this coming year because he signed that deal with the Timberwolves that offsets it. But they paid him $4 million to go around and appear on ESPN and just hang out with other coaches for the year.
I was talking to Brian Scalabrine at some point this season, and Thibodeau came up, and I asked him what Thibs is up to, and he said, I think he just watches film every day. Like, I get the sense all he does is just watch film, even in his year off. So that's awesome, if that is true, and Tom Thibodeau was just breaking down all of his old game film.
Well, what he was doing was, and I got to talk to him a little bit at the Combine last month here in Chicago. He basically, what he did was he spent the year just going around the league and just, like, he'll go to Golden State, spend a few days with the Warriors, spend a few days with the Spurs, spend a few days with the Mavericks. I think he was in Charlotte at one point in Houston. Like, he was just kind of going around, hanging out with his coaching buddies for a few days and just kind of observing how different organizations handle themselves. And what he told me was that doing that just kind of prepared him for – you know, this new role that he's going to have where he's going to be the coach and president of the Timberwolves.
Yeah, and Thibodeau, man, Tom Thibodeau, that guy is one-of-a-kind worker. The stories about people who have worked for him and the amount of hours that he puts into basketball is unbelievable. Do you think that a year away and the way things ended in Chicago – I guess we'll change his style because obviously, you know, he was playing guys too many minutes. He had a really hostile relationship with the front office. Do you think that year away might be good for him and help him develop Karl Towns, Andrew Wiggins, those guys, and kind of see how other teams like the Warriors and all the teams that he went to see practice did things?
Well, I do think his approach is going to be different with the team that he has. Well, the thing is, you have to remember when he took the job with Chicago in 2010, Derrick Rose was going into his third year in the league, and they had, you know, Joakim Noah and Taj Gibson were all still young guys. Like, he kind of got on the Bulls when they were kind of an up-and-coming team. And the first couple of years before Derrick Rose was injured, the stuff about him playing guys too many minutes never really came up. So I think the thought process is he's just going to do the same thing he did with the Bulls and hope that Karl Towns and Andrew Wiggins don't get injured.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting there because obviously the NBA has changed a lot lately, and teams nowadays, you either rest your stars or you're at a big disadvantage, I think, because other teams are resting, and guys are a lot fresher on the teams like the Warriors, the Spurs, even the Celtics rarely play Isaiah Thomas more than 32, 33, 34 minutes. So I think he has to change there, and I don't know whether he will. I don't know whether he's capable of bending or wants to bend. It would have been fun to see him back with Jimmy Butler, I think. That is like a perfect marriage of coach and player. Like Jimmy Butler feels like the guy who really, really wants to be pushed as much as possible.
You know what, though? I think Andrew Wiggins is that guy, too. I think he kind of has the same attitude. He's a worker. He's going to be totally okay if Tom wants to play him 48 minutes a game. But, I mean, if they were able to trade for Jimmy without giving up Wiggins, that defensive combination of the wing would have been something.
Yeah, that Timberwolves core is fantastic. And with Chris Dunn now, do you – well, first of all – before we get completely off track and start talking about the Timberwolves, do you think that there still might be a deal between those teams to be reached with Jimmy Butler and Chris Dunn, right now we're a few days after draft night? Do you think they could rekindle those talks at some other point?
I'd be very surprised if that happened. I think it's a little bit more likely just because the Celtics have more assets and they have more Brooklyn picks coming for another few years. They can still, even throwing this year's pick, which was Jaylen Brown, out of it. Like, they still have the assets that I think they would get the Celtics to, I mean, they would get the Bulls to listen on a little bit more. But Gar said at the press conference after their draft finished that they would have to just get absolutely blown away by an offer to consider moving Jimmy, and I don't really see any offers on the table right now that are doing that.
Yeah, it's this whole process. I keep coming back to teams in the NBA. They do not want to move guys that they have under current contracts, long-term contracts, because in this NBA landscape, guys who signed a couple years ago, even contracts that look a little crazy at the time, don't look like that anymore. And the contracts that were good at the time, like Butler's, are going to be fantastic a couple years from now. So to me, guys like Jim,
even a guy like Robin Lopez, who the Bulls bought in the Derrick Rose trade, he's making $13 or $14 million a year for the next 3 years. You're not going to be able to get a starting quality center who's a rim protector in this free agent class for less than $18, $19, $20 million a year. Joakim Noah is going to get it. I mean, we saw a report yesterday that the Wizards are prepared to max him out. Like, so getting something. The other one that comes to mind is when the Pistons traded for Tobias Harris. It cut into their cap space, but they're like, hey, we have a good player under a contract that's going to be below market when the salary cap goes up. And so I think with the Bulls, with Jimmy Butler, like, he signed a max deal a year ago, and now that max deal is the equivalent of, like, a $12 or $13 million a year contract under the new cap. And so, like, he just, this isn't a situation like Kevin Love in Minnesota or, like, Chris Paul in New Orleans or Carmelo Anthony in Denver where they know that he's going to opt out and he's going to leave and you just have to get whatever you can for him. He has 3 more years under contract before he can even opt out. So there's really no rush to do anything with him just to do something until the right deal really presents itself.
Now, he has to be a little put off by this whole situation, right? Like he's made 2 All-Star teams in a row, and it seemed like he kind of became a scapegoat of sorts last year. There were a lot of reports that he beefed with Hoiberg, that he and Rose might have had friction about who was the star, that he was trying to be a leader but didn't necessarily know how to go about it. And I think he's admitted that he learned lessons about leadership last year. How do you think he is handling this situation? Is there some hostility there between him and the Bulls front office about this whole situation and the way it's kind of lingered for so long since the trade deadline, a little before the trade deadline?
That's a little bit hard to get a read on because Jimmy's always going to come out and say there's nothing wrong. I just want to say real quick that reports of tension between him and Derrick Rose, I think, were a little bit overblown. Like, it was pretty clear as the year went on that they weren't a great fit on the court together, but this idea that they didn't like each other or that they didn't get along or there was personal tension between them, I've never gotten the sense that they don't like each other or they don't get along off the court. I think it's going to be a little bit easier for this to become Jimmy's team now that not only with Rose gone, but Joakim Noah is not going to be back. Pau Gasol is not going to be back. I wouldn't be at all surprised if they traded Taj Gibson at some point during the summer. So a lot of the veterans who had a problem with Jimmy trying to assert himself as the leader of the team, like, if they're all gone, then it's all a bunch of new guys. And then some of the younger guys are holdovers like Bobby Portis and Nikola Mirotic and Doug McDermott. Then I think Jimmy is going to have a lot easier time putting his stamp on the organization.
What was the source of the tension there? Like, there are a lot of teams where players emerge as the best player on the team, one of the best players on the team, and there's no friction. What was the source of that with Jimmy Butler, I guess, that kind of, like, 2 years ago, he was regarded as low maintenance, like, just did his work, got better and better, and then, like, the past year, maybe a little longer than that, it's like almost like he's become a bit of a diva. What happened, and how was that relationship between him and his older teammates?
Well, I think that was a little bit part of it because Jimmy Butler is not a guy who is you know, has been groomed. Because if you look at a guy like, you know, like Derrick Rose, huge, you know, big high school recruit, number one pick in the draft, or somebody like Anthony Davis or John Wall, those guys have known from a young age, basically like since they were in middle school, that they were going to be a top pick in the draft. Jimmy Butler didn't get, you know, wasn't recruited in high school, played in junior college before he got an offer from Marquette. And then he was the 30th pick in the draft, and when they drafted him, the thought was, okay, he's going to become like the success of the Luol Deng. He's a really good defender. He might become a good offensive player someday. Nobody thought he was going to be as good as he ended up being. And so, and my buddy Vinny Goodwill, who covers the Bulls for CSN, has the, kind of a good analogy for this. He said that, you know how like when you guys are in high school and you and your group of friends all go off to college and then you come back, and maybe somebody is different than they were, and they're more successful than they were, but you still view them the same way that you did when they were in high school, because that's how you've always known them. With Jimmy Butler, even though, you know, he's an all-star, and he's like one of the 20 best players in the league right now, to guys like Taj Gibson and Joakim Noah, who've been around a lot longer than them, he's still the younger brother and like a hard, you know, 30th pick in the draft. So he just, it's the kind of thing where like it's an awkward transition to make, and those same guys are still on the roster.
Yeah, and that Bulls team with Rose, Noah, it's kind of the era that never happened. Like, they were so close to emerging as a title threat, a team that could compete with LeBron James in the Eastern Conference, that could compete for NBA titles year after year, and then just had, like, the worst luck ever. And they did well to still win around 50 games during some of Rose's injuries. How do you look back on that era, first with Thibodeau, and then I guess kind of how it started to unravel a bit under Hoiberg last year? Like was it as close to being not a dynasty, but one of those long-term contenders as it feels like?
Well, everything just changed fundamentally, Jay, when Derrick Rose had his first knee injury, because their first year under Thibodeau, they had the number one seed. That was LeBron's first year in Miami. They go to the Eastern Conference Finals against the Heat. They lose in five games, but you know they have this great foundation. The next year, they're the one seed again, and then Derrick Rose blows out his knee in the first game of the playoffs. And then since then, like if you don't have Derrick Rose at full strength, they didn't have him at all. Basically, the next 2 years, he missed all 12-13 and played 10 games in 13-14. But if you don't have Derrick Rose, then that just the team that you had built around him just can't function the same way. And because of Tom Thibodeau, because of the way he just can get the most out of guys, they were still able to win a lot of games, but they were never going to be contenders if Derrick Rose wasn't at full strength.
Yeah, and the thing about that was, like, he was always there. I think it's good for their franchise to finally move on from him, not because of necessarily getting back Lopez, even though that was a nice get, getting back Jerry and Grant, even though that was a nice get. I just feel like there was always that uncertainty with Derrick Rose. Like you're waiting for him to become somebody that he's probably never going to be again. And I feel like that really hurt them the last few years, because every move they made, it was like, we can still, there's still a window for us if Derrick Rose just gets back to who he was at one point in time. And I think moving on from him was probably for the best for everyone involved.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I kind of thought before the trade happened that it was not a great idea to trade him, just because I thought that he would be the kind of guy that you would have to give up an asset to even get a team to take, let alone to actually get stuff back. Like, and if you're going to do that, then, you know, he made those comments at Media Day last year about being focused on trying to get a new contract in 2017 when the cap is going up. So if you're ever going to get a year when Derrick Rose is motivated and healthy and doing everything he's supposed to do and, you know, getting back to some semblance of what he was, it's going to be this coming year. And so I thought if the Bulls weren't able to get anything back for him, then they should just kind of keep him and take advantage of that contract year and then let him walk. And then, you know, the fact that you're able to get stuff back for him, you know, I think the Knicks are going to get a good version of Derrick Rose if he stays healthy.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good fit for him, because they'll play Porzingis, a center who stretches the court. They'll play Carmelo, who's obviously a threat from everywhere. And he won't have guys like Joakim Noah, who's a zero on offense. Taj Gibson, who can't...
unless Joakim signs there.
Unless Joakim signs there, then he will have Joakim Noah, who's a zero on offense. Poor Joakim Noah. He was one of my favorite players for a while. I know a lot of Celtics fans despise him because of you know, the playoff battles they had against him and kind of his antics. But that guy just plays his heart out. It killed me as a basketball.
You know, it's like the quintessential guy that you love him if he's on your team and you hate him if he's playing against you. His teammates love him. The city of Chicago loves him. He's great in the community. When he wants to be, he's the best guy to talk to in that locker room from a media standpoint. I'm going to miss him.
Yeah, now let's circle this back to Butler. Do you think he's the type of guy who will always have friction with his teammates, or was that just a weird situation in Chicago, and he's kind of easier to play with than this last year seemed?
There was a lot of weird stuff going on this year with the coaching change and then with some of the guys being holdovers from the Thibodeau era who were still kind of in a different headspace, but I'm optimistic that things are going to be a little bit easier between him and his new set of teammates. It's going to be sort of a fresh start, especially if, like, Taj Gibson is not brought back, and then Joakim Noah and Pau Gasol are not brought back. So I think it's the jury is still out, but there's a pretty good chance that he'll still be able to get along with teammates.
Yeah, that whole situation was just sour, I think. It seemed to me like they were trying to hold on to championship hopes that weren't even possible. Like, that team last year was not built to really contend. Obviously, they didn't make the playoffs, but they were never built to contend. It felt like the older guys especially were really trying to hold on to that and at least, like, felt like they should still be in that upper tier in the Eastern Conference at least. And everything about that team just felt weird. Butler, again, your best prediction, does he stay with the Chicago Bulls for the duration of his contract?
Duration of the contract, I'm going to say no. But I think this season he will still be in Chicago.
What will it take for a team to get him?
More than they've been offering. I don't know. Like, this stuff is impossible to predict. But none of the offers they've gotten so far, I don't know what the Celtics exactly were offering, but you know, if it wasn't like multiple Brooklyn picks and Avery Bradley and Jay Crowder, like, that was probably not going to get it done. And I don't know what they'll be able to get in the future, but it would have to be a package like that for them to consider it.
Yeah, and I think that's too much for the Celtics to consider. So maybe there's no deal there, and maybe Celtics fans should move out. It was funny because, it wasn't really funny for Jaylen Brown, but after they picked Brown, people wanted Butler so bad when those rumors came out that Wick Grusbeck, there, the Celtics co-owner, came out to announce the pick and was met with boos by the crowd at the TD Garden and Jimmy Butler chants as well. People were calling, "We want Jimmy Butler." It was a bad scene. People really have the Jimmy Butler love affair over here in Boston. They want him really badly.
Well, they just want, like, would it have been the same thing if, like, the hot rumor was Gordon Hayward? Would they have been chanting that, or, you know, Kevin Love or whoever? Is it that they really want Jimmy Butler, or do they just want a star?
I think it's partly that they just want a star, but I do think of those three guys that you mentioned, Jimmy Butler is the most attractive to Celtics fans. I don't know if the Celtics front office feels the same way. I think Hayward is kind of an underrated player. And obviously, Love in a different situation.
Also the fact that he played for Brad Stevens in college, so.
Yeah. So, but the Jazz will never trade Hayward. The Jazz are kind of like the Bulls.
About Hayward, he can opt out. He can opt out after next season, so they can just sign him in a couple of years if he really wants to play for Brad Stevens that badly.
Yep, you heard it here first, Celtics fans. Celtics are signing Gordon Hayward when he opts out of his contract. Starting rumors out here, Hyken. I like it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we appreciate you coming on. Thank you very much. This has been the first, I believe this is the first collaboration of the Locked On Network, right?
That's the first one I've heard of.
This is groundbreaking, pioneering material you guys are listening to. Thank you for listening in to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Rain and Jays. Take care, everyone.